Well, good morning, and first of all, I'd like to thank you for inviting me to this symposium, and I'm going to switch gears once again and talk about biochar use in manure-amended soils. And actually, when I first took this on, back when I was invited, I think in March or April, I thought, well, this is going to be a piece of cake. And in all actuality, this is not a piece of cake because there hasn't been a whole lot of work done with biochar application to manure-amended soils, and in fact, just a handful of research studies have occurred, and most of those have come from our location in Kimberley, Idaho. So I'm hoping to leave you this morning with sort of a, you know, some hope as to what we can use biochar for in manured systems. And so we're going to focus on nitrous oxide emissions for this last 20 minutes or so. And so everybody knows the issue. We've got these confined animal feeding operations like you see on the bottom of the figure here. They create a massive amount of manure, right? We all know this. And land application occurs usually within close proximity to these locations that are creating these manures. That leads to excess nitrogen, excess release of N2O, et cetera. Of course, we all know this. But if you think about it, the picture is much bigger than confined animal feeding operations. And we know, for example, that the N2O emissions or N2O concentrations in the atmosphere have increased since pre-industrial times from about 270 parts per billion up to almost 330 parts per billion. Depending on who you talk to and what you read, that has a half-life of about 120 years in the atmosphere. And we know that N2O destroys ozone. And so, you know, it's a high concern, or it's a relative concern for us. In fact, if we take a step back from manure-amended soils and we take a look at agricultural in general, most of the emissions, about 50 to 70%, come from the soil. And so the question that I'm going to ask you this morning is, how do we alter these soil N2O emissions? And so about, I'd say, 10 to 15 years ago, biochar streamed on the scene. And I'm sure most of you in here have heard the term biochar before. It's basically the leftover product from pyrolysis, or burning of some kind of organic carbon material. That pyrolysis typically occurs somewhere between 350 and 700 C, although the range can be much broader than that. And it's typically produced under reduced or total lack of oxygen conditions. So it's produced under anaerobic conditions. We know some generalizations about this material that you see in these three pictures up on the top left, that as you increase pyrolysis temperature, you typically lose volatile organics, you get greater structural carbon content, you typically have greater ash content, which leads to greater pH values in this material, et cetera. The beauty of this is that there's been a number of studies, not only from our research location, but all around the globe, that have shown that biochar actually reduces N2O emissions from soils. And that's what I'm going to show you this morning. So how do we measure N2O emissions? We've done this for a number of years in our research site. This is Dr. Rick Lentz down in the bottom right-hand corner, and Rick and I have collaborated on a number of biochar projects over the years. Right, you typically put some kind of material into the soil. You cover it with some sort of cover like you see in the bottom right-hand corner, and you use a number of different methods. So a photoacoustic autoanalyzer is what you see in the center, or you actually take headspace measurements and you put them in helium-flushed serum bottles, and you take those bottles to the lab and measure, among other things, N2O in the headspace. And so we're talking about biochar here for the next 15 minutes or so. And so this is some data. This is really interesting data. This is a meta-analysis performed. It's actually published in one of the more recent biochar books. We call it the Biochar Bible. And it was published by Johannes Lehmann and Stephen Joseph recently. Chapter 15 has this meta-analysis looking at N2O emissions from biochar-emitted soils. And under laboratory conditions, if you look at all the laboratory work that has been done focused on N2O emissions, we see almost a 50% reduction in N2O with biochar. In field studies, it's not quite as good, but it's still pretty good. And on average, we see about a 50% reduction in N2O emissions. That's overall. If you break the data down a little bit, looking at the different crop residues or materials that you can use as feedstocks, crop residues, about 60% reduction. Woody materials, almost 60%. Other, this would include biochars created from manures, zero, roughly, give or take. on average about 50% reduction. Wow, looks pretty good. Let's break it down a little bit more. Reduction in N2O emissions depends on application rate of this material. So as you increase application rate under field studies, you typically see increases in or decreases in N2O emissions. And a number of studies have been performed in the laboratory, and as you increase application rate, we see very nice marked decreases in N2O emissions, almost 50%. And so I think this begs the question as to why. And I'm going to try to answer that for you this morning. So let's look at a couple other scenarios. Here's a study. This is unpublished. It should be published soon from one of my colleagues, actually one of my co-authors from Giessenheim University in Germany, where she looked at compost. The center bar is compost plus biochar. So biochar was added to the material, which was, it began as cow, horse, and poultry litter. Biochar was added up front, or biochar added after the fact in terms of composting. And I think the take-home message here is if you look at the two bars on the left-hand side, if you add biochar to this compost up front to the manure, you see a marked decrease, almost 50% decrease in N2O emissions in that compost pile itself. Here's another study. This came out of New Zealand. This was looking at biochar application with urine. So the urine was applied at 930 kilograms per hectare. The closed circles is the control. The open circle is no biochar but urine applied. The triangle, the closed triangle, is 15 megagrams per hectare of biochar, and the open triangle is 30 megagrams per hectare of biochar. And so we see, at least at the 30 megagram per hectare application rate, we see a marked decrease in cumulative N2O emissions. And again, the question is why? So what I wanted to do is take a step back and remove manure or urine from the equation and look at some relatively simple studies. And this study, these two top bars are a relatively simple study that was performed in rice paddies in Asia, where biochar was added at 2% by weight and urea was added at 200 milligrams per kilogram. On the left-hand side and the right-hand side, you're looking at two different paddies. You have a control or check and biochar applied. At least on the right-hand side, we see marked decreases in N2O emissions, and we don't see much of a decrease, if any, on the left-hand side. It just depends on where your starting point is in terms of the nitrogen content in the system. But these people are going to be applying nitrogen fertilizer, and so if they apply nitrogen fertilizer with or without biochar, the biochar itself causes, again, a drastic decrease in N2O emissions. And here's another study. Now, somebody begged the question, does it matter in terms of the particle size that you use for this material? Large particles or small particles? And you look at the closed bars or the closed symbols. Those are increasing biochar, or I'm sorry, those are no biochar, biochar applied at a particle size greater than 250 micron or less than 250 micron. And we see no differences. But when you start adding nitrogen into the equation, the open triangle, the highest curve, if you will, is the control with no biochar but nitrogen added, and the other two are biochar added. And what this tells you is that it really doesn't matter in terms of particle size that you start with. You're going to see a response, or you're likely going to see a response, or, i.e. reduction in N2O emissions. And again, why? So this is where I'm leading you. I'm leading you into the mechanisms as to potentially why this occurs with this material, and maybe get you thinking about using it in the future. And so I think one of the main mechanisms for reduction in N2O emissions deals with nitrate. Here's a nice picture of biochar in the upper right-hand corner. And this material may actually improve microorganism habitat. In fact, there's some work that's come out of Johannes Lehmann's group in Cornell that's shown fungal hyphae have invaded, if you will, these pores. And they've made these pores their home. And so if you can just imagine what would happen if microorganisms flourished in this system, maybe something is going to occur in terms of nitrogen or changes in nitrogen content in the system. Early on in this work, a lot of us theorized or hypothesized that we're adding a high carbon to nitrogen ratio material. This biochar is almost 70%, give or take, carbon. So as a high carbon to nitrogen ratio, we thought that we had seen enhanced immobilization, which causes a decrease in nitrogen, which would theoretically cause a decrease in N2O emissions. And I can tell you that's probably not what's happening anymore. And in fact, there's been, boy, a solid handful of research that has shown that this material actually can sorb nitrate within the porous structure itself and capture nitrate. So it removes it from essentially the environment, if you will, which causes a decrease in nitrogen, which is leading to a decrease in N2O emissions. That's the new hypothesis. And in fact, some of my colleagues have removed biochar particles from the soil itself and extracted nitrate in great quantities from that particle itself. It's really, really interesting. Here's another story to hopefully back this up. What we're looking at is increasing nitrogen concentration on the x-axis and increasing nitrate sorption on the y-axis. And what this research group did was they pyrolyzed one feedstock at increasing temperatures. And what you see is with increasing pyrolysis temperature of this material, you see an increase in sorption of nitrate. And what typically happens as you get above about 400 degrees C, you start volatilizing tars or other compounds that are clogging those pores up in the right-hand corner. And once the temperature reaches a certain point, those pores open up, leading to greater nitrate sorption. Here's some work from our research group in Kimberley, where we did a relatively long-term incubation study in the laboratory with increasing amounts of biochar, 0, 1, 2, or 10% by weight, added to a soil that had received 2% dairy manure. And you can see with the green bar is the 10% biochar application by rate. In all instances, we see a decrease in nitrate nitrogen. Initially, about 3 years ago, we decided that that was due to immobilization. And now if I had to take a look back, I would think that it mostly dealt with tying up or sorbing nitrate into those pores of that biochar. And I would assume in both of these instances, we would see decreases in N2O emissions based on others' data. So that's one mechanism. Another mechanism that's proposed in terms of reducing N2O emissions in these systems is capture of ammonium. We know that these materials, these wood-based materials or grass-based materials, have a relatively high surface area. In some instances, their CEC is relatively high, which can capture or sorb ammonium and remove it from the equation and thus reducing N2O emissions. And in fact, here's some anecdotal evidence for this. This is some work looking at ammonium removal from solution versus various biochars. The bars that go up are the ones that sorbed ammonium, and this research group took two of those biochars and they applied them to a soil and looked at the amount of ammonium that had been lost or leached from the system. The open triangle is the soil alone, and the other two curves are the biochar applications, so these two biochars, reducing ammonia loss and potentially reducing N2O emissions. I'm gonna skip this graph here in lieu of time. So I think another very large player in terms of reducing N2O emissions, in fact, this may be one of the most important mechanisms of biochar for reducing N2O emissions, and it deals with shifting in microorganism populations. Using biochar, we can change microorganism populations and thus change the conversion of N2O to N2 gas in a number of different scenarios, composts, manures, manure-amended soils, etc. And in fact, this is a really, really nice study from ESNT recently, where the scientists used pig manure, wood chips, and sawdust, either with or without 3% biochar by weight. The closed circles are the biochar amended materials, and the open circles are without biochar. And in almost every instance, you see a decrease in N2O emissions. And these authors did this is a wonderful paper, and what they theorized was that, and they looked at this too, they theorized that when you had a compost pile without biochar, you had an increased amount of nitrite reductase present, okay? This is the enzyme that converts basically nitrogen or NO3, or nitrate, to N2O gas. When you add biochar, you shift the microbial population to those that favor nitrous oxide reductase, which converts N2O, or basically to N2 gas. All right, so we see an increase in N2 gas emissions with biochar application. And in fact, that was likely the cause for this decrease that I showed you earlier. It was likely not a function of mostly nitrate capture, but a function of shifting of the microbial community to those that favor the reduction of nitrogen to N2 gas. And we've actually done this in our research laboratory up in Kimberley. And we've looked at these genes NOSZ genes that actually are responsible for converting nitrogen to N2. And this is looking at increasing biochar application up to 10% by weight, and we see significant differences as we increase application rate, favoring those microorganisms that convert nitrogen to N2 gas. And you could ask why. Why is this occurring? Well, I think this ties in with what I've just shown you, that we probably have a decrease in bioavailability of that key electron acceptor, i.e. nitrates, being captured in those pores. We have sometimes an increase in pH, which favors those microorganisms that produce NOSZ. And last but not least, biochar may actually act as a sink and capture electrons versus them going to NO3. But I think more often than not, biochar may actually act as an electron source and provide electrons for this final reaction to occur. And I think that's really important. And if you think about it, this makes sense because biochar is created under anoxic conditions, so it's under reduced conditions. So potentially there's free electrons available on this material itself. And in fact, if you look at some of, this is unpublished work from our laboratory, looking at five different biochars and looking at a change in millivolt or change in redox conditions over very short periods of time. Some biochars change drastically from initial to final, and some don't. But for example, grapewood, over a 1 hour period, it goes from plus 309 millivolts to negative 32 millivolts. I mean, it really gets you thinking about what kind of chemistry or electrochemistry is occurring in the system and how that drives changes in N2O emissions to N2 gas emissions. It's really, really fun work. Do I have like 1 minute?
No, I have 3 minutes.
Oh, perfect. All right, so I'm like, okay, I'm almost done. This is one of the last mechanisms that's been proposed, and it's N2O sorption or capture onto organics, i.e. either biochar or organic materials that are present in the system to begin with. And so biochar, we know, depending on how you pyrolyze it, contain a heck of a lot of different aromatic and non-aromatic compounds. And so it's potentially feasible that these compounds could be oxidized like we see up here in this equation, resulting in the reduction of N2O gas. And essentially the oxygen from N2O forms, or it combines with a carbon-carbon bond to form some intermediate step, which is relatively unstable, which leads to the formation of a ketone plus N2 gas. And it's possible, and is it probable? Maybe, maybe not. So we know that these organic functional groups that are seen on the left-hand side of this equation are relatively short-lived in systems, but biochar has been known to capture and hold onto or sorb some of these organic phases and maybe prolonging this sort of reaction occurring in systems. It's really, really fascinating. I think the research is in its infancy with this process. And so in conclusion, I've shown you that biochar application can reduce N2O emissions by almost 50% depending on what you're using. It's dependent on both the biochar type or the feedstock that you start with, as well as the application rate. I think if I was going to preach to most of you that are dealing with manures or manure-amended soils, I would say that, I say it here, biochar application to manures can reduce N2O emissions during composting. I think that's really where this needs to go. You know, you take a material and you have your manure already stockpiled, it's concentrated on site, you bring biochar in and try to capture some of that N2O and keep it in that product so you have a value-added product at the end of the day. And I'm actually working on this project, or a project very similar to this, with a producer south of Reno, Nevada. So it's happening. I think I told you why, because of a number of different mechanisms that I just outlined for you. And with that, I'll take any questions. Thank you. You asked me a question earlier today. You used up your questions. Good, Chris. The mechanism is just simple sorption or capture in the pores itself.
So it's just water absorbing, and then nitrate is dissolved in the water, and it can't do that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. That's what Claudia, you remember Claudia from Giesenheim. That's what Claudia is thinking is occurring. Yep. Oh, right here.
My question is more practical, that if a selling compost to a farmer and you absorb all of this nitrogen on the biochar, are they going to get it back?
You know, that's a great question. Did everybody hear the question? Yeah. So you sorb nitrogen on the biochar, are they going to get it back? That's right. So they will get it back. And so one of the slides that I skipped over that I could have went into in great detail was a study that we had performed in southern Idaho looking at, among other things, nitrate sorption onto biochar. And yes, you get it back. So this was a long-term study. We applied biochar in year one, essentially. We didn't see a response. Year two, we saw a drastic decrease in nitrate nitrogen and a drastic decrease in yield. By year three, that was gone. And so the nitrate actually does come back out. And so one of the things that one of my colleagues, one of my co-authors, is looking at is using biochar as a fertilizer source for nitrogen. So taking the biochar up front, loading it with nitrate, and then using that material as a nitrogen fertilizer.
Slow release.
Slow release, yeah. Let's go way back, yeah.
Jim, thank you for the talk. I'm curious about for the work that you're doing here, focusing on biochar amendments to composting process. Is there a favorite feedstock for the biochar that you recommend, and also a favorite pyrolysis method for producing the biochar?
Good question. So I personally like. I could go on and on about this. So I personally like using local feedstocks, and I try to solve a problem. This is what I think I've based a lot of my career upon, is taking something that's local in terms of a problem and using that for beneficial, solving a problem beneficially in a local area. For example, lodgepole pine beetle kill in the western U.S., millions of acres. We have areas where we have a lot of mine sites, abandoned mine sites in the western U.S. that generate acidity. So can we take a local feedstock and use it to fix a local problem? The issue with the farmer or the producer I'm working with south of Reno is very similar. And they're using local feedstocks, i.e. thinning of the trees up in the Sierras, to create a wood-based biochar to capture nitrate or capture nitrate and otherwise, remove or reduce N2O emissions from their system. Overall, to answer your question, I would focus more on the grasses and the hardwoods or softwoods for making biochar versus manures, just because of the data that's out there. If you're concerned about N2O emissions, it doesn't look like the reductions are as favorable as using a grass or a wood-based product. We have time?
You're over, but you guys can stick around as long as you want. So you can hold him captive on.
Well, how about one more question?
Wonderful, thank you. So we do biochar research at UC Riverside, and I run into this question from a lot of people. They're worried about the capacity for this absorption or absorption, right? So especially if something like a CAFO where you're trying to mitigate this emission as your main purpose, when you look at
I guess I'm not following your question. Can you overload your biochar with, say, nitrate? Yeah. Of course.
Yeah,
you can overload it. I can't tell you what that is, so it depends on a number of different factors. So, first of all, I won't go backwards, but, it depends on the number of pores. Actually, it depends on surface area, pores, pore size. Can the nitrate actually move in? Can water move in? Depends on your feedstock that you start with, temperature that you pyrolyze. But, yeah, you can oversorb it, just like any material, right? There's a limited capacity to hold nitrate. And that's what my colleague in Giesenheim University over in Germany is working on, to tell you the truth. And that should be done, hopefully, in the next year or so. Yeah. I'll report back.
Well, thank you
Great,
so much.
Thank you.